For the next hour, Danny Price Fixer sat transfixed as Mama Sutra told him of the longest war in history, the battle for the freedom of the human mind waged by the Illuminati against the forces of slavery, superstition, and sorcery.
"It began,"
she repeated,
"in ancient Carcosa, when the first humans were contacted by the serpent people of Valusia. The latter brought with them certain fruits with strange powers. These fruits would be called hallucinogens or psychedelics today. But what they did to the brain of the eater was not in any sense a hallucination. It opened him to invasion by the Loiger. The chief fruit used in these rites was a botanical cousin of the modern apple, yellowish or golden in color, and the snake people promised, 'Eat of this and you shall become all-powerful.' In fact, the eaters became enslaved by the Loiger, and especially by Hastur, who took up residence in the Lake of Hali. Distorted versions of what happened have come down to us in various African legends about people who had commerce with snakes and lost their souls. In the Homeric tale of the Lotus Eaters in Genesis, and in the Arabic lore utilized in the fiction of Robert W. Chambers, Ambrose Bierce, and others. Soon, the cult of the Yellow Sign was formed among the Eaters of the Golden Apples, and his first high priest, Gruad, bargained with Hastur for certain powers, in return for which Loiger were fed on human sacrifices. The people were told that the sacrifices were good for the crops, and this, in fact, was partially true, for the Loiger ate only the energy of the victim, and the body, buried in the fields, gave back its nitrogen to the soil. This was the beginning of religion and of government. Gruad controlled the temple, and the temple soon controlled Hali, and then all of Carcosa. So things went for many thousands of years, until the priests were rich, fat, and decadent, while the citizens lived in terror and slavery. The number of sacrifices increased ever, for Hastur grew with each victim whose energy he absorbed, and his appetite grew with him. Finally, among the people there arose one who had been refused admission to the priesthood, Malik, and he taught that humanity could become all-powerful, not through eating the golden apples and sacrificing to the Loiger, but through a process he called rational thought. He was, of course, fed to Hastur as soon as the priests heard of this teaching, but he had followers, and they quickly learned to keep their thoughts private and plan their activities in secret. This was the age of midnight arrests, purge trials, and accelerating sacrifices in Carcosa. And eventually, the followers of Malik, the few who had escaped extermination, fled to the Thuranian subcontinent, which is now Europe. There, they met little people who had come down from the north after the snake folk had exterminated each other in some form of slow, insidious, and stealthy civil war. Apparently, the snakes never met in a single battle during all this time. The poison in the wine cup, the knife in the back, and similar subtle activities had slowly escalated to the deadly level of actual warfare. The serpent people had an aversion to facing an enemy as they killed him. The little people had their own experiences with the Loiger long ago, but all they remembered were confused legends about orcs,
whom Mama Sutra identified with the Chochos,
and a great hero named Frodo, who battled a monster called Sauron.
Evidently a Shoggoth.
Many millenniums passed, and the little people and the followers of Malik intermarried, producing basically the human race of today. A great lawgiver named Kull tried to establish a rational society on Malik's principles, and fought a battle with some of the serpent people who had surprisingly survived in hidden places. Most of this got lost in exaggeration and legend. After more thousands of years, a barbarian named Conan, or Conain, arose, somehow, to the throne of Aquilonia, mightiest kingdom on the Thuranian subcontinent. Conan brooded much about the continuing horrors in Carcosa, which he sensed as a threat to the rest of the world. Finally, he disappeared, abdicating in favor of his son, Khan, and reputedly sailing to the west. Conan,
Mama Sutra said,
was the same person who appeared in the Yucatan Peninsula at that time and became known as Cucullan. He was evidently seeking, among the Mayan scientists, some knowledge or technology to use against the Loiger. Whatever happened, he left them, and only the legend of Cucullan, the feathered serpent, remained. When the Aztecs came down from the north, Cucullan became Quetzalcoatl, and human sacrifice was instituted in his name. The Loiger, in some fashion, had turned the work of Conan around and made it serve their own ends. Carcosa, meanwhile, perished. What happened is unknown. But some students of ancient lore suspect that Conan actually circumnavigated the globe, collecting knowledge as he went, and descended upon Carcosa with weapons that destroyed both the cult of the Yellow Sign and all traces of the civilization that served it. Throughout the rest of history,
Mama Sutra went on,
the cult of the Yellow Sign never regained its former powers, but it has come very close in certain times and certain places. The Loiger continued to exist, of course, but could no longer manifest in our kind of space-time continuum unless the cult performed very complicated technical operations, which were sometimes disguised as religious rituals and sometimes as wars, famines, or other calamities. Over the intervening ages, the cult waged steady warfare against the one power that threatened them, rationality. When they couldn't manifest a Loiger to blast the mind, they learned to fake it. If real magic wasn't available, stage magic served in its place. By real magic, of course, I mean the technology of the Loiger. As science fiction writer Arthur C. Clarke has commented, any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. The Loiger have that kind of technology. That's how they got to Earth from their star.
You mean their planet, don't you?
Danny asked.
No, they lived originally on a star. I told you they were not made of matter as we understand it. Incidentally, their origin on a star explains why the pentagram, or star shape, always attracts their attention, and is one of the best ways of summoning them. They invented that design. A star doesn't look five-pointed to a human being, but that's what it looks like to them. Finally, in the 18th century, the age of reason appeared to be at hand. Tentatively, as an experiment, one branch of the Illuminati surfaced in Bavaria. They were led by an ex-Jesuit named Adam Weishaupt, who had inside knowledge of how the cult of the Yellow Sign operated and performed its hoaxes and miracles. The real brain behind this movement, however, was Weishaupt's wife Eve. But they knew that, even in the age of reason, humanity was not ready yet for a liberation movement led by a woman. So Adam fronted for her. The experiment was unsuccessful. The cult of the Yellow Sign planted fake documents in the home of an Illuminatist named Zwack, whispered some hints to a Bavarian government, and then watched with glee as the movement was disbanded and hounded out of Germany. A simultaneous experiment began in America, started by two Illuminati named Jefferson and Franklin. Both preached reason, like Weishaupt, but carefully did not make his mistake of stating explicitly how this contradicted religion and superstition. This latter matter they discussed only in their private letters. Since Jefferson and Franklin were national heroes, and since the rationalistic government they helped to create seemed well established, the cult of the yellow sign dared not denounce them openly. One trial balloon was attempted. The Reverend Jebediah Morse, a high yellow sign adept, openly accused Jefferson of being an Illuminatus and charged him and his party with most of the crimes that had discredited Weishaupt in Bavaria. The American public was not deceived, but all subsequent yellow sign propaganda in America has rested on the original anti-Illuminati claims of Reverend Morse. Due to Jefferson, one Illuminati symbol was adopted by the new government, the eye on the pyramid, representing knowledge of geometry and hence of the order of nature. This was to be used in later generations, if necessary, to indicate the truth about the founding of the U.S. government, since it was well understood that the cult of the yellow sign would try to distort the facts as soon as possible. Another Illuminati work of more immediate importance was the Bill of Rights, the part of the Constitution still under most vigorous attack by the yellow sign fanatics, and certain key expressions in early documents, such as the reference to nature and nature's God in the Declaration of Independence. As far as Jefferson dared to go in leavening traditional superstition with a natural science admixture. And, of course, the first half-dozen presidents were all high-ranking Masons and Rosicrucians who understood at least the fundamentals of Illuminati philosophy.
Mama Sutra sighed briefly and went on.
All this is only the tip of the iceberg. Government actually plays a minor role in controlling people. Far more important are the words and images that make up the semantic environment. The cult of the yellow sign not only suppresses words and images that threaten their power, but infiltrates every branch of communications with their own ideology. Science and reason are forever mocked or portrayed as menacing. Wishful thinking, fantasy, religion, mysticism, occultism, and magic are forever preached as the real solutions to all problems. Best-selling books teach people to pray, not work, for success. Movies win awards by showing a child's ignorant faith justified over the skepticism of adults. There is an astrology column in virtually every newspaper. More and more, the ideology of the cult of the yellow sign is set forth openly, as the ideas of the Illuminati and the Founding Fathers are forgotten or distorted. One only has to think of any anti-democratic, anti-rational, or anti-humane idea out of the Dark Ages, and one can immediately think of some popular religious columnist or some movie star who is blatantly expounding it and calling it Americanism. The cult of the yellow sign is determined to destroy the United States because it came closer than any other nation to the Illuminati ideals of free minds and free people, and because it still retains a few tattered relics of Illuminism in its laws and customs. This is where Mr. Hagbard Cellin enters the picture,
Mama Sutra said grimly.
Cellin,
she went on,
was a brilliant but twisted personality, the son of an Italian pimp and a Norwegian prostitute. Raised in the underworld, he early developed a contempt and hatred for ordinary, decent society. The Mafia, recognizing his talents and predilections, took him in and financed his way through Harvard Law School. After graduation, he became an important mouthpiece for syndicate hoodlums in trouble with the law. On the side, however, he also took some cases for American Indians, since this was a way of frustrating the government. In one particularly bitter battle, he attempted to stop the construction of a much-needed dam in upstate New York. His unbalanced behavior in the courtroom, which helped lose the case, indicated his deep attraction for the occult, since he had obviously been taken in by the superstitions of the Indians he served. Mafia dons conferred with leaders of the Cult of the Yellow Sign, and soon Hagbard, who had been wandering around Europe aimlessly, was recruited to start a new front for the cult, to fight the United States both politically and religiously. This front was called the Legion of Dynamic Discord, and while it pretended to be against all governments, it was actually devoted only to harming the U.S. He was given a submarine, which he later claimed to have designed himself, and became an important cog in the mafia heroin smuggling business. More important, his crew, renegades and misfits from all nations, were indoctrinated in a deliberately nonsensical variety of mysticism. An important center of Celine's heroin network was a fake church in Santa Isabel on the island of Fernando Po. Obviously,
Mama Sutra concluded,
Joseph Malik, the editor of Confrontation, was investigating the Illuminati, deceived by the lies spread against them by Celine and the Yellow Sign adepts. As for Professor Marsh, his explorations in Fernando Po may have revealed something about Celine's heroin ring.
Then you think they're both dead,
Danny said somberly.
And probably Goodman and Muldoon and Pat Walsh, the researcher, also.
Not necessarily. Celine, as I have told you, is both brilliant and quite insane. He has perfected his own form of brainwashing, and it amuses him to recruit rather than destroy any possible opponent. It is quite possible that all of these people are working for him right now against the Illuminati and the United States, which they will believe to be the major enemies of humanity.
Mama Sutra paused thoughtfully.
However, that is far from sure. Events in the last few days have changed Celine for the worse. He is more insane and more dangerous than ever. The assassinations of April 25 all across the nation appear to be his work, engineered through the mafia. He is striking out blindly against anyone he imagines may be an Illuminatus. Needless to say, most of the victims were not actually in the Illuminati, which is, as I have mentioned, a very small organization. Since he is in this violent and paranoid frame of mind, I fear for the lives of anyone associated with him.
Danny was slumped forward in his chair, drunk, dejected, and depressed.
Now that I know,
he asked rhetorically,
what can I do about it? My God, what can I do about it?